Lally ho, and welcome to Charlene Dropout, aka Nadia Descends into Catboy Hell for a Bottle of Fantasia. This is a monthly special Final Fantasy XIV pod from the Axe of the Blood God RPG podcast. I am co-host Nadia Oxford, actually host of this particular segment, and I am beyond excited to bring you this podcast. I hope you're all just as excited to listen. Before we latch on our myriad buckles and put our boots on Yorzea Reborn, I would like to introduce you to the gentleman who will be helping me host this episode, and hopefully subsequent episodes as well, as they are available. Both of them are equally to blame for getting me into this game, by the way. First of all, let's give it up for fellow US Gamer alumni, Mr. Michael Williams. It is so nice to be working with you again.
Hello, hello, folks. I was part of getting you in it. I did not help you in-game, though.
No.
I did help you on get on our server, so the best server of all.
The Ultra server, where it is not quite yet an erotic RP server, but it's certainly getting there. There are rumors about houses and orgies and stuff like that.
I mean that's pretty much just Final Fantasy 14, and if you've ever played on an RP server, it is a wild trip.
I have never, but I have heard the legends and the stories, and they sound just absolutely fantastic. And also here is a fellow Canadian and fellow Final Fantasy 14 aficionado. He's been on this podcast before to talk Final Fantasy 14 with me. Hello, Victor.
Hi, everybody. How are you?
We're great.
Fantastic.
I mean, I'm doing great.
I'm wonderful. I'm so excited. This is really great. Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, no problem. I asked Victor if he wanted to do this. I think I got the fastest yes in history. He's just really enthusiastic about this, which makes me happy because as far as Final Fantasy 14 lore and facts go, you're pretty much unmatched amongst even my friends, and they're all pretty crazy.
I consider myself a hardcore casual or a casual hardcore, you know. There are people who know more off the top of their head about lore than I do, I've put my time in, gosh darn it.
We'll get into this in much more depth in a minute, but I can't remember, were you there since 1.0?
Do we want to save that for our origin stories?
Let's save that. Okay, yeah. You know, okay. That sounds like a good idea because I find 1.0 stories are extremely interesting. I have a couple of friends who their names are actually in the credits for Realm Reborn because they played the whole thing.
That's fantastic.
They got to watch the descent of Balmud to Dalamud, and it just sounded like it was not like nothing else.
Totally.
I would like to be part of that. Okay, so I would like to do a little bit of housekeeping. First of all, Axe of the Blood God is an independent RPG podcast that is supported by Patreon pledges. You can visit us at patreon.com/bloodgodpod for now. Look forward to an actual site soon. If you're listening to this podcast, it means you are already a supporter and can access our monthly specials. Thank you so much. This is at the $5 level. If you donate $10, you can get access to, for example, our Pantheon of the Blood God, which is where we evaluate an RPG and determine whether or not it deserves to be ranked among the most influential RPGs of all time. At the time of this recording, we actually just recently went through Shin Megami Tensei 3 and decided, you know, does it deserve to be enshrined amongst the best? Is it a little bit too flawed and dated for that? Listen to the podcast if you want to get our final determination. I will not spoil it here. I do hope you enjoy. This is going to be like a very casual sort of podcast starring three people who are very much into the idea of having deep discussions about Final Fantasy 14. I know there's a lot of you out there, but as I say, there are many guns out there, but this one is mine. These are my two fellas, and I'm glad to have you on. I thought this week we would just kind of ease into things and talk a little bit about three things in particular. Number one, why we started playing. What got us into this game? Number two, why did we choose the race that we did? Because, of course, Eorzea has myriad races from our beloved cat boys to Humes. There's a whole bunch of races to go through, and I think everyone has a sort of thing that speaks to the people who play. So we'll get into that. Number three, let's talk about the first job that we chose. So let's go ahead and start. Victor, why don't you go ahead and tell us a little bit about why you got into
So, boy, this tale starts, I think where all good stories start, the year 2003.
Ooh, good year, I think.
This goes back to FF11.
Nice.
And I was madly in love with a girl.
Aw, baby.
Oh, wow.
I had been a Nintendo kid mostly growing up. So I got to like kind of love Final Fantasy from afar in the late 90s, early 2000s. And then when they announced FF11, and I realized I have a computer, so I will get to play the next Final Fantasy. First year of high school, I met a girl who I fell madly, madly in love with, and she played FF11, and I thought, this is perfect. I'm gonna start 11. I'm gonna get to know this girl better, and we're just gonna be together forever. I didn't realize that, you know, computers are things that you have to upgrade and like have you know, different components for to do certain things. So I, poor little Victor, I had Play Online set up, but all I could do was play Tetra Master in it. It just couldn't run 11. So I have fond memories of just firing up the Play Online viewer, listening to the music. So then they announced 14, and when they announced 14, they announced it for PlayStation 3 and PC. But I had a PlayStation 3, thought I'm going to sign up for the beta. I'm going to get in on this thing. That didn't work out. Eventually they said, sorry PS3 beta people, but we're not sure when the PS3 beta is going to start, so we're giving all of you PC beta keys as a consolation to sort of tide you over until we can figure out the PS3 situation. Little did we know the PS3 situation would never get figured out.
It was pretty bad.
Yeah. So I had this PC beta key, but you know, even though this was 7 or 8 years later, I still didn't have a computer that was good enough to run it.
Right.
So I went to a friend's house to try to use my beta key and start it up. We got through the character creator. I started up a character in Limsa. And as soon as I tried to walk out into the field, it just slowed down to a crawl.
That's all, folks.
Yeah, completely unplayable. You know, I wandered around the town a little bit, and then I was like, I'm not going to be able to play this.
And this was during the era of the 10,000 polygon flower pots,
the classic story, yeah, of flower pots and other assets having just as many polygons in them as a player character. And it was a real mess. I do wish I could have played more of 1.0, but it was just impossible. Then, you know, Realm Reborn comes out. I bought a copy of the collector's edition for PS3 because I think even the collector's box, the big, beautiful box with the Amano art on the front, that was still only like, I think, $30.
Because
they wanted people back so bad. Like they were willing to give this game away because, you know, they had faith in it, but also they just needed people to give it a try again and see how different it was. So I got this great collector's edition. I kind of got it on a whim, even though it was like the first week that A Realm Reborn came out. So I did my free month. I didn't know what I was doing. It was my first MMO. I didn't know what I was up to. So I did my free month and I was like, I'll come back to this later. Then Heavensward came out. I was like, nah, it's time for me to give 14 a real shot.
You saw those dragoons and said, you know what?
Yeah. So, yeah, since about you know, a month or two after Heaven's Word, I've been playing ever since. You know, I'll take a few months off every once in a while, but for the most part, I've been playing pretty constantly for about 8 years.
I find that one thing Square Enix is extremely good at, and this is part that will go into my story just briefly, I suppose, because it's not too long. Square Enix's videos, those cinematics that they do for each expansion, are just incredible. Like, even if you haven't played the games, even if you're just like a casual observer, I think they're really, really eye-catching. I remember seeing, I went to Distant Worlds a couple of years ago at Otakon, and they had Heaven's Word, and they had the cinema, which of course, huge spoiler for what happens at the start of, and the end of A Realm Reborn. But
yeah, but you don't have any context for it.
I had no context. Right. I'm like, why did they kill that Barbie doll? What's going on? But it's pretty cool, especially when, like, I've always been into Dragoons, and Heaven's Word, the second half of the trailer, when they're just leaping after those dragons, like, to me, that's just like, oh, that's so freaking cool. I want to be a Dragoon. So that was like a real push for me. And the thing with Final Fantasy 14, I think a lot of people will tell you they got into it because they were pushed in from all sides, which is what kind of happened to me. I initially started because we were going to actually have a group going for US Gamer, and that never really worked out. But I made my character. I chose my cat boy. I'm sure we'll get into that. And I chose Lancer because I wanted to be a Dragoon. And basically, I ran around a bit. I had a PlayStation 4. I had tried the game on the PC. And like you, Victor, once all the characters kind of teleported in after you do the intro bit, that's it. It was gone. Like, my poor computer was just screaming in pain. So I went with the PS4. You were always talking to me about it. I remember we had lunch that one time at the Pickle Barrel. And you
I guess when I brought up Heaven's Word, I was like, it's Dragoons the game. I know you. You will enjoy this.
You told me, like, man, Astinian is Kane 2.0, and he absolutely freaking is. And I'm like, maybe. And then, oh, here I am writing Final Fantasy 14 erotica, so the circle is closed. And I think, Victor, you said that was your long game. You told me that later.
Oh,
I did it.
But what also pushed me was, Mike, I don't know if you remember, it was PAX something or other. It was before Shadowbringers launch, and we were just kind of walking around the show floor. Square Enix was going all out for Shadowbringers, and just like, I was so impressed with the cinema, which again was incredible, even without context, and the decorations and those stupid foam swords. I still have mine. So yeah, that kind of did it as well. And another thing about Final Fantasy XIV, it's extremely easy to get snared if you are already a Final Fantasy fan. If you look at that opening cinema for Answers with the actual fall of Dalamud, what they showed at the end of 1.0, it's just an incredible little bit of cinema, to the point that I'm pretty sure that's what Nintendo emulated when they did their Smash trailer for their end of the world event.
Super Smash Brothers.
Yeah, when everyone's just kind of getting speared by that light. I really think they borrowed from that, and for good reason. But when you see that battle on where's the Plains of Cartano, I think it is, and you see, like, holy crap, they're using Magitek armor. Holy crap, it's the Garlean Empire. I get that reference. So all that stuff just kind of worked in tandem. Everything worked in tandem to get me to play. Actually, Emily from Square Enix, when I met her in Japan, when I went to go interview Yuji Horii, she's like, you got to start playing. So I'm like, okay, fine. So, here I am. How about you, Mike?
So I have been an MMO player for a while.
You were always the guy that we went to, so, US Gamer.
Yeah, so I had played probably since EverQuest.
Oh,
not
wow.
Like hard play, but like, I had played EverQuest, and when it was like, oh, this is the brand new thing. With the trains and all that old style.
Mm.
Then I went to World of Warcraft. I've played Asheron's Call. I played a bunch of that older era where everyone was either trying to ape EverQuest or eventually trying to kill World of Warcraft. And I actually played not 9, what is it, 11? Yes. Mm-hmm. I played 11, yeah. And I actually bought 1.0, but I never played it. And then it came back around. We started US Gamer in 2013 when A Realm Reborn came out.
Right.
So I've reviewed A Realm Reborn with, like, if you go on the US Gamer site, which is still there, and look at our original 14 ARR review, it's Pete Davison as first opinion and then myself as the second opinion. So that's how I got back into it. And then I would play, I still play a decent number of either MMOs or live service games. So and it works out really well. I don't know if Blizzard and Square have talked about this, but they basically alternate years for expansion.
Right.
So Shadowbringer, like Endwalker, is coming out this year.
November.
And what's it called? Shadowlands for World of Warcraft came out last year.
Right.
And then, you know, they basically, each one gets one of the year. And that way I can actually, in between the updates and stuff, and Square makes it a lot easier because they tend to be on that hard, like, quarter, like, okay, we know exactly mm-hmm. about when it's coming.
Yeah.
Blizzard, yeah. Not as much, yeah. But I can usually jump in, do the story bit, do whatever the raid tier is.
Right.
Catch up, and then I leave.
Yeah.
So I don't like play on a raid because I always have to another review game or some other game or WoW or something like that. So that's how I like. I got in for work, but then I'm just in because, and I remember telling you, like I like it. They get better.
Yes.
Like ARR story is fine.
It's a standard Final Fantasy story, find, which is fine. Like, people say, oh, it's terrible. Oh, it's really slow. Number one, they really did streamline it. You have tickets now to the Waking Sands, thank God. So you pray return to the Waking Sands isn't really a meme anymore. Yeah. And they slimmed down the storyline. They slimmed down a lot of the quests. And honestly, the story itself is very standard Final Fantasy stuff.
Yeah,
it's okay.
I think the text there is good. It's more of a pacing problem than anything. And a, oh my God, we need to create an entire world in 2 years. Let's salvage what we can. And yeah.
And Heavensward got better and Stormblood got better. And then Shadowbringers was the one where I started saying to people, like, no, this is probably one of the best Final Fantasies.
Yeah.
And I remember writing an article, like, the problem that I always have in saying, like, no, it is one of the best Final Fantasies. It's hard to get into because you still have to go through the rest of it.
Yeah.
And there's no way around that. Like, Eric, one of our alumni, just brought up, like, hey, maybe I'll get into 14. He's like, is there a way to skip? I was like, yeah, there is a way to skip, but it's not worthwhile because you need, like, all of those, the moments with the Sign of the Seventh Dawn and the villains, like, from the beginning. Mm-hmm. In the same way that some TV shows, like that first season, is just not good, but you need the foundation from that first season to make the rest meaningful.
Yeah.
There was actually an instance where I took an alt and I wanted to play with my friends on another server. So I paid to skip everything to Heavensward, and I actually paid to level up my archer to level the level cap. I did not like it at all. I felt so cheated of something when I did that. I felt so lost. Yeah. I'm like, great, I have all these abilities. What the hell do I do with them? Because they're actually, the thing with Final Fantasy XIV is a lot of your abilities are implemented into the subquests that go with your job. You need all that foundation. Final Fantasy XIV is a story-based MMORPG, for better or for worse, and that is what it does best.
It's hard enough knowing what you should be doing when your abilities are doled out level by level.
Exactly.
I can't even imagine jumping into a later level job that you've never played before. And I think that was one of the fears that a lot of people had when like the level skips and stuff first came out.
Yeah, I did buy Machinist, like the level skip, just to jump in, just because I was like, I need a DPS just in case.
Yeah.
Yes.
I do not use it at all, but I was like, I'll need a DPS, and that looked the most interesting because this was Shadowbringers, and this was the
is that
update
where, it
where they added the robot.
Where they completely reinvented, like turned it into a completely different job. Yeah,
this was the rework where, like, before they were like kind of sad and whatever, and then they like added like the robot, and everyone was like, "Oh my god, the robot is amazing!"
Well, and pre Shadowbringers Machinist was like a math nightmare. It was so I played it for quite a while at level 70 pre Shadowbringers, and I. Boy, I'm so glad I don't ever have to think that hard again in my life. Managing those meters and the heat gauges and stuff was a lot.
Another thing, though, about skipping Final Fantasy is, honestly, the Dark Knight quest is some of the best writing I've ever seen in a Final Fantasy game. The way that it's implemented into your gameplay, the way that the journal entries change and are being written in Frey's voice. Did you just shoo a Dark Knight away from me?
Dark Knight.
Oh, how dare you?
Mike, how dare you?
We'll get to it when we talk about classes. We'll see.
I love that whole quest. I love playing Dark Knight. I'm so My Chemical Romance hardcore up in here. But yeah, sure. Let's get to that. Let's get to why we play. Let's start with classes. Why we started with the classes we did. I'm pretty simple. I started with Lancer because I wanted to be a Dragoon. I became a Dragoon, and all was quite well. I did that thing in the Titan fight where I used the evasive maneuver. I forget what it's called. Evasive jump. Fell right off the edge.
Classic.
I got like 5 commendations for that because the people in the chat were just killing themselves. Because I was a sprout, so of course I was a dumb idiot, and I did exactly the thing they knew I was going to do. So they're like, I just remember distinctly one guy saying, "Look how they massacred my boy."
So. There's a lot of rites of passage in 14, and that is one of them for sure.
That is certainly one of them. I took that off my hotbar so fast. I just had no use for it anymore. What about you, Victor?
Do we want to go in? Is it like the first job we started as, or like what we main now? Or like
it could be both. Like I mostly
do both.
Okay. Because when I wanted to play 11, I knew I wanted to be a black mage. Mm-hmm. So when I started 14, I was like, I'm gonna revisit that feeling I had when I thought I was going to start an MMO, and I'm gonna finally be a black mage. So I started up Thaumaturge, then I don't know what happened. That was my free trial time, and when it was done, I was like, okay, that was cool, but I don't really get it. I was very much if I'm fighting like a fire-based enemy, how come I don't want to use water magic on it? Like, what do you mean I'm supposed to, like, balance the astral and umbral fire and ice? I was like, well, no, I should, if I'm fighting a tree, I should use my fire magic, right? And I was like, I don't get this, whatever. So then I came back for Heavensward, and I started a new character, and I thought, I'm going to start Summoner this time.
Oh, boy.
And I had a really good time with that. Summoner was the first job that I took all the way to 60. I liked it plenty. But then because I Fantasia'd and renamed my character and started up a new character, I was like, this new character doesn't, I don't feel like she would be a Summoner. I knew she kind of felt more like a melee kind of person. She didn't seem magically inclined. So I started with Monk, and I got a feel for some melee DPS, which was really fun. And then I discovered an element of the game that we're not allowed to talk about, but it required me to play as a ninja, because I was exploring areas of the game that maybe you're not supposed to be exploring.
Well, this is, does this have to do with the fact that it's built on the bones of Final Fantasy 14 1.0?
Yeah, certain abilities could get you into certain areas that you weren't supposed to go. Oh. And I loved that. I was like, this is my urban explorer like desire coming through. Like, this is the part of me that like wants to glitch out games and explore out of bounds. This is like my speedrunner impulse. So because of that, I started playing Ninja really seriously. And then Stormblood came out and I needed to play a Red Mage.
Yes.
I love Red Mage. I've always loved Red Mage. I always put a Red Mage in my party whenever I can. They're the fanciest. They dress the best.
They do. Pimp.
And then Shadowbringers came out. And I got a Dancer.
Dancer.
Yes.
So, like, man, this is great. This is perfect. So, Dancer is kind of my main DPS. But then when quarantine hit, I had a bunch of friends that started playing. And they didn't all necessarily... They mostly wanted to play DPS because they were also pretty new to MMOs. And I was like, okay, if you guys are going to be doing that, I will gladly take on some of the other roles so that we can get through this easily and as a group. So that's when I took on White Mage and Paladin. So
right.
As of right now, long story short, Dancer is my melee. Red Mage is my magic, Paladin is my tank, and White Mage is my healer.
Wow, that's a lot of versatility right there. Because I've maxed out my Dragoon, I've maxed out my Dark Knight. I am working on Thief or Rogue or whatever it's called.
And, yeah, Rogue
that
to Ninja
becomes Ninja, right? So
yeah.
That sounds pretty fun. I actually, when I first met you online, you were a Dancer, and I tried Dancer. I had no idea what the hell was going on. I just quit.
Yeah.
So wait. You maxed out your Dark Knight. Are you tanking? Are you tanking?
Yeah, I've tanked. There was one time I tanked in, I can't remember the name of the Haunted Mansion, but I screwed up so bad. I was going
Hawk
in all
Manor.
The wrong. Hawk Manor, going in all the wrong directions, pulling all the wrong things. The people were so nice to me, though. They gave me a hug at the end.
Yeah,
I'm hurt to say that you joined the home gang.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I'm sorry.
Boo!
They're too cool.
So mine is once again pretty easy. So I've played a lot of MMOs. I've always been a Paladin if I get the chance. And so when it came to FF14, I did mess around with Pugilist for a little while. I was like, oh, maybe I'll do Monk. But also when we started playing, it was the double jobs. Like, so you needed one job to 30 and you needed another to 15. And the thing that stopped me from Paladin is the first one was Gladiator.
Yeah.
Which was fine. But the second was Conjurer.
Really?
So it was Conjurer to 15. And that, I feel for healers leveling up, because that was just like, oh God, you're so weak. Maybe I don't want to do this. So then I tried Pugilist for a while. But ultimately I was like, now I'll go back. I'll get Paladin done. So Paladin is... like, I tank. I like tanking. Tanking is what I do. Like, let's Like, I'll do the pull, let's go.
Has that always been your approach to MMOs? Like, did you have to warm up to that, or did you start thinking like, where does this confidence come from?
So I started EverQuest. I think I was just like a thief or whatever the roguish class. I think it was WoW. So I started WoW in beta as a paladin, and vanilla paladin is not good. But Burning Crusade added Blood Elf Paladin, so now I looked hot and improved the class. And so Burning Crusade is when I got into raiding. For a while, for like two expansions, I was like a hardcore raider. So now, like, as long as I get the tank like abilities or stuff, you know, MT or anything, whatever is going to be, it's fine, and I'm used to pulling, and I've done it enough where I'm like, let's work through the group. You know, like, if you're doing a light party, like, hey, don't pull ahead of me. Yeah. If you do, I'll probably let you die the second time you do that. Like, you know, sometimes occasionally, like, if the healers, you know, you'll end up in a group and the healer will be like, pull as many as you can. I'm like, all right, healer.
Yeah.
Do this. Let's go.
Yeah.
So I'm like used to that. And I know that's a difficult spot to get into for a lot of people.
Just as someone who spent 6 years playing this game as just a DPS until I got the confidence to even try tanking or healing, I'm curious about like how someone approaches it and decides I want more responsibility from the get-go.
And it's also slightly different because you can just, in 14, you can just queue up for raids and stuff.
Yeah.
And usually what ends up happening in the way that they design the encounters is anybody can take the tank. So like the two tanks will be sitting there just wailing on the boss in the same spot. And whoever is ahead in the, you know, rage is going to take the thing, and it doesn't really matter.
Right.
And occasionally you have the fights where they split up, and you know, you can get that over time. Whereas in like WoW, a lot of the two tank fights are like your main tank needs to do this and your off tank needs to do this, and you have to sort of sync up,
right?
And
whereas in 14, those mechanics, like tank switching, rarely comes up in normal content in 14. That's not until you're getting into extremes and savage stuff. So
right, like you can tank swap if you want to when like a tank buster comes, but you don't have to. And most people can get through it, like especially paladin. I got enough cooldowns, like I can, you know,
clemency, baby.
Invincible, no drawbacks, as opposed to poor Gunbreaker. Like, I'm almost dead now.
Freak everybody out. Yeah. I'm glad we can have Paladin chat. This is nice.
Yes, no, it's fantastic.
I can't really explain it, but Mike, you're just such a Paladin personality. It just matches you.
thank you. Also, as a fellow Paladin, you can thank me because our old AoE rage generator was that little like with the
flash.
I almost forgot what it was called. I remember talking to Yoshi P and was like, look, this was Stormblood, and I was like, look, I always play Paladin and I love Paladin and I love everything about it. I was like, but flash sucks. It's like
Yeah.
And I was like, do you think you could do something for that? And they replaced it with our very cool AoE slash move, and it's awesome.
There you go.
I love it.
That's the benefits of Mike being, I forgot you're like besties with the OCP.
I recently, just a couple months ago, I finally started playing FF11. So, ooh, you know, 19 years later, and I was like, no, I'm finally going to fulfill my dream from when I was 14. I'm going to play 11. And then I was playing Paladin and saw the Flash ability, and I just had shell shock.
Yeah.
I had this is where it came from. This is, I understand PTSD. Now. Everything makes sense.
Yeah. No, dude, you didn't see it. It was just like it did this like high pitch, like, and then like our sword would flash, and that was supposed to anger the enemies and bring them in with, you know.
So it was your aggro. It was your aggro attack.
Yeah, it was back when aggro management was much more of a thing, and you would be swapping between a tank stance and a sword stance and stuff.
Yeah. So by the time I took Dark Knight, they got rid of the tank. You still kind of have a tank stance, but it's not what it was. Not as much as it was.
Now it's just always on. Before you had to swap, and then you always had to be like, look, I need to get through my aggro rotation and like two flashes before you really get into it.
Yeah.
Right. But Mike, you must be happy because the Endwalker has that kind of Paladin emphasis to it.
Oh, yes. As soon as I saw the trailer, I was like, Paladin on the moon. Yeah, no.
I have to say that was that flourish at the end is so freaking cool when he like, flips his cape. I've seen someone actually already do a cosplay of that exact armor set. Like, how did you even manage to do that? And he just apparently dissected the trailer like frame by frame to get that. Because I don't think that set exists in the game yet, like the Griffin cape and all that yet.
No, I think that's going to be the Endwalker artifact armor.
Oh,
for
man, I can't wait for some new clothes. I actually really like my glamour for my Dragoon because I had to go to Eureka and get the True Blood armor, version of it.
Have we started Glam Chat, our regular segment?
No, that's gonna have to be that's gonna be a 5-episode like class epic right there. Because when it comes to glam, I'm very very basic. I know what I'm the same way with interior decoration. I know what I like. Okay, it's balanced. It probably has a wood finish because I'm a child of the 80s. I'm good. So that's my glam chat right there.
Mike,
but we will certainly get into it.
Do you care much about glam?
I set up glams at one point, but the problem is like, because of the way I play, it's just like, I'll jump back in, do the story, then I'll like, let's do the current raid tier, and then I put the raid tier gear on.
Yeah.
Right.
And then I go away. I'm like, so when I come back, I'm always in whatever the plate for the current raid gear
You've
is.
You've been in a lot of Nier outfits.
Then. Yes.
Coming back to
Yes. No, I remember when I did get when I was doing not Puppets Bunker, the one before it, and we got the Nier costume dropped, and I was like,
yeah.
Yes, we won. Let's go. We're out of here. We're never coming back.
Never again.
That's how I felt with Eureka when I finally got my glam. I'm like, I am never coming back to this place. Hey, the music haunts my nightmares.
Well, look, we're gonna have to arrange a full Eureka exploration.
I have to go back to Eureka because I need my relic weapons.
Yeah.
I need him for glam. I just need the swords.
How far did you get in Eureka, Mike?
In the last one, not very. Like, no. I started, but I always tend to, like, I don't have a standard group, so I have to rely on the charity of the commons, where, like, I'll be running along, and then there will be, like, another group over there, and they'll be like, would you like to join us? I'd be like,
yeah.
Join us, child. Thank you. And these days, there's not as many because of the front. I forget the name of the front. I actually haven't visited yet. Sounds like the first
Bojan Southern Front.
Yeah, yep. I haven't done that yet. So there's something about a chocobo. I don't understand that meme.
A lot of red chocobo you'll learn to fear. Yeah.
I do know there are.
They're dangerous.
Yeah.
I know in the Chocobo Forest, there are Chocobos that I fear because they can cast Choco Meteor. And I learned that the hard way when I was trying to level up a Blue Mage or something really weak. Oh, this Chocobo, I'll kick its ass. Oh, God. That's what happened.
This is Choco Meteor to the extreme. Like, it is maybe one of the most complicated AOE patterns in like normal content. It's wild.
And a Chocobo has it, is what you're telling me.
Yes.
And we'll drop it like it's hot. Just,
it's incredible.
On a whim, and people just die horribly. Because, like, Eureka was a certain level of just sort of attempt to Zerg. Like, it was the next level above fate farming, where it was just like a giant mass of people that would move from spot to spot. And Eureka almost like that. And then Southern Front tries to add some more mechanics to it.
Yeah.
To the point that you can't, well, you can. Like, people have sort of automated the process mentally, but you can't just like, let's just go.
Yeah.
Let's just go and kill everything we see.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
the thing that's cool about Boja is that, like, Eureka was, look, we're going to have an episode about Eureka at some point, but
yeah,
the primer is that, like, Eureka was designed to play like FF11. So it's about, like, getting notorious monsters to pop.
Yes.
And then once those notorious monsters are out on the field, everybody gathers, takes it down. What is cool about Boja is that it takes those notorious monster-like fights and makes them sort of instanced, so that they have an opportunity to add more advanced mechanics, and it makes every one of those fights feel kind of like a boss fight, and where you,
like,
learn
a raid
their patterns.
Boss fight. Yeah,
as opposed to a notorious monster out on the field where it's just kind of, you know, it's dropping AoEs every once in a while, and you just kind of deal with mechanics as they come.
And everyone just kind of swarms at like a bunch of army ants, and it's dead in 2 seconds anyway.
At this point in time.
I guess then, to just kind of segue clumsily into our last major point here, what race did you start with and why? I will go first. I am a cat boy. I am a moon cat boy, a Makote keeper of the moon. And the way that happened is, of course, I'm making my character. This was before we had the Aura and before we had the, who are the big lion dudes?
Hrothgar.
So I always kind of like playing animal characters. I don't know. I'm furry, I guess. I don't know what I am, but I like animals a lot. And the closest we had back then was Makote. And, well, hell, I like cats. And I like things that lurk at night, because as someone who detests the sunlight and actually gets nauseous when they're in it, I love the idea of a cat clan that hides in the forest, does not have shit all to do with the sun, worships the moon, and does that thing where everybody's just kind of like, males and females don't really hook up so much as they just have one-night stands. And I love being married, don't get me wrong. I've been married for 20 years quite happily, but as a writer, I find that kind of dynamic a lot of fun to write about. So I was really into that. I was into the whole biology. I really admired the characteristics and stories that Square Enix gave to these races, like their biology. I went back and I read the stories of all 50 tribes that are on the plains, the Asm Steppe, the Aura tribes, and it's nuts, because there's like, oh, here's a tribe that marries its horses, here's a tribe that drinks its own piss, like,
it's
someone's thought of all this.
It's so great and
I love that. I actually love the Asm Steppe. It's one of my favorite places in a video game ever, so that's my story of my moon cat boy. His name is Aslatoa Marshiel. I gave him when I started this game, I'm like, oh, let's name him something stupid, like, I don't know, like Acton Kitten, or my usual nickname. And then I changed it because I got into the game and I got serious about the character, and I'm like, okay, let's name him according to proper dynamics for a Makote keeper of the moon. And I did. Okay, next.
You can go. Mine's boring, so.
Oh, sure. My first character, I think, like a lot of people, I didn't know a ton about the lore or anything, so I made a cat boy. I think he was probably he might have been a keeper of the moon. I didn't feel any, you know, real attachment to him. So when I came back to start out proper, I made a cat girl. They're cute. I don't know.
Yeah.
And then I realized very quickly that everybody plays a cute cat girl or a cute aura.
Until they added bunny girls, then.
Yeah.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So then once I had gotten into the game and knew that I was interested in the lore, I decided that I wanted to play, I just knew that I wanted to play an underrepresented race, tribe, gender combination.
And now I know why you play a roe female.
Yeah. So I'm a big lady roe, big sea wolf. I love her to death. She's fantastic. And I there are times where I've considered maybe trying another character and another race, but I love her too much. She's great.
I will definitely start up a bunny boy when they come in. I want to see how they're going to pull this off. It's probably just going to be, okay, Mikote are supposed to be rare. And of course, as we all know, they're not rare. They're freaking everywhere. Males are supposed to be much rarer. That's fair. You actually don't see that many male catboys around. Certainly not keepers of the moon. You mostly see keepers of the sun. Everyone thinks they're going to be a noon, but they're actually Tias. And I think when I saw the lore for the keepers of the moon, about how like the males and the females kind of give each other a lot of space, I thought, okay, well, they're trying to do the Viera thing here without giving us Viera. So now that we have male Viera, and the idea is supposed to be that male Viera are violent and territorial and don't like each other. I guess that's going to be part of the lore, but in the game, you're going to have a 50,000 bunny boys running around anyway, so they're just going to have to do their best, I suppose.
So I am one of those people who, when it comes to RPGs, I will create a character that is as close to me as possible.
All right.
I love that.
So all of my like Mass Effect characters are always just a black dude, you know, short hair, which luckily for me, short hair is perfectly fine.
Yeah.
So for 14, my original first character, I've actually had two characters, was a Hure Highlander, and that was because they, with the skin tone, looked closest to black dudes. But I could never get over the fact that Highlanders do not have eyebrows.
Like, yeah.
Yeah, if you look at the models of the Hure Highlanders, like, they have no eyebrows whatsoever.
It's a bummer. So crazy. It's a real bummer.
Why?
I don't know. I have no clue. It bothers me. Like, if there was an option to be like to have eyebrows on the Highlander, I would still be that. But so eventually I rolled a Hure Midlander or whatever the normal human raced.
Yeah.
And I'm a very super tanned like white dude essentially. Which is fine. Like most of the look is correct to me. You can't change the face, so it's just kind of like a like, oh, okay, he's like the basic face, like okay, whatever. Yeah, that's why I chose the race, and that's why, so like anytime they add a new race, I'm just like, ah, whatever. I don't care.
Yeah.
That must be kind of frustrating though, because a lot of character makers don't really have great options for black flares, like in terms of character creation. They're getting better, I think, but
yeah, it depends on when they've added faces, and they've gotten, a lot of them have gotten better. Even that have set faces tend to, they'll have like, these are the four white guy faces and the four black guy faces, yeah, and like the two Asian dude faces.
The two Asian dude
faces. Yeah.
And so, like, at least one of those will usually work.
Yeah.
14 just doesn't have one.
my friend was she was starting a character and she knew she wanted to make him, she wanted him to be like a mixed race, like dark skinned Alamegan Far Eastern character. Right. So she was like, I'm gonna push this character creator to its limits and see how like non-white I can make this guy. And she ended up making like he's kind of like a cool like Polynesian dude. Like she did a really good job of like giving him some, you know, non-Caucasian features, and she did a really good job. So
Good for her.
It's possible, but it takes some, you gotta really tease it out of that poor character creator.
I think even in game you don't get that many mixed races. Victor, you would know this better than I would, because it's something I read up on once because I was very curious. You do find some, like Hilda is half elves and half Hur. I can't remember, Arnvald, is that his name?
Yeah.
He's half Garly and half Highlander, I think it was. You do have some, but I think I read once that it's not necessarily controversial for people in Eorzea to like marry out of their own race, but it is highly controversial for them to have children. And I don't know if that was old lore. I don't know if it's still around. I don't know if you heard anything about that. I was just curious.
Yeah, well, this did come up in one of the lore panels before Heavensward, because people had been asking about it, and Koji kind of said like, just you wait, and then and then that was basically Hilda, and we were like, okay, so what else?
And
yeah, okay, cool. So it exists. When do we ever get to play as any of these people?
Yeah, I was about to say, like, you know, the reason why they probably like the lore is definitely like the backstop to, we don't want to animate any new models.
We don't want to make these models. It took us 6 years to make a Makote child.
I do love little bobtails.
We're never gonna see a Rogadin kid ever. I just have to accept that.
Right. So like any sort of like mixed race or children or anything like that, for them it's like, well, that's a whole nother character model. So so they just went into the lore. Like I have to, like the art team was like, there are no children. No one has any children ever. Yeah. And I'm like, can we add even a few? No. Go away now.
Yeah. I mean, everything that is a non-standard like player character model is still just on a player character rig with a custom head. Like Hilda is, I believe she's a Midlander pure character model with a custom face that has Ellison ears. All Garlians are all mostly Ellison character models.
Oh, I didn't know that. Yeah, I thought they were all like Highlanders with eyes.
They're using an Ellison rig, and they have since 1.0. Just with, you know, custom faces and things like that. If you look at anytime Nero is around, he's always doing like the Ellison first position or third position like ballet stand,
the prissy sort of stance. Very, that is very Ellison now that you mention it.
And Nail Van Darnis, all of their stances are all Ellison. So they really try to just like use what they've got, and if you ask for years and years and years, they'll give somebody special ears that make them mixed race. But I hope it's something we see more of. And that, as well as like acknowledging what tribe the like all of these Far Eastern races are, because these aren't Midlanders or
Highlanders or anything. Yeah.
So when is that going to be a character creation option, and when can we, you know,
For some reason, I thought the samurai, Gosetsu, that's his name, right? I thought he was a Highlander model for some reason.
No, he's Rogadin.
Ro, okay, so he's Ro. But is he standard Ro, or is there something more Far Eastern to him?
That's the thing. He's not a sea wolf, and he's definitely not a Helmsguard. I mean,
right.
he is just using a standard Ro rig, like mechanically, but with a custom frame on top of that. But we don't know what clan he is. And you know, I would like to address that. I would like to know where Far Eastern Rogadin hail from, where they live, what their deal is.
It took a while. They added what they called in Battle for Azeroth allied races, so you could here's the Tauren, but now they got like moose antlers instead, you know, here's dark dwarves and stuff like that. So I would like to see some of that, like not necessarily an entirely new animation rig, but more options within, like, okay, you got your Highlander and Midlander, let's like add another two in there.
Yeah.
Like they could, as you were saying, Victor, they could easily take Gosetsu and make him a third clan, something like that.
Yeah, you'll often find, usually in the same breath as when people were talking about, you know, the male Viera or the female Hrothgar, you'd hear people also talking about the third race, like when are we going to get that third clan that will sort of expand things a little bit more and give people more role play opportunities and options.
Although I know why they don't, again, because like they were saying,
that's a lot of work.
Even adding, it's just a lot of rigging work for us. It hurts
the
so
fact
much.
That they even gave us male Viera, I did not see that coming. I thought for sure that Yoshi P hated us all for making him give us
Viera
in the first place.
I think he when Viera and Hrothgar were announced, well, first Viera were announced, and he said, "This is going to be," or he said, "I think this is probably our last race."
Yeah.
And then a couple months later, Hrothgar announced, and he says, "Okay, this is actually our last race. Thank you, everybody." And then you had all the people pushing back, being like, "Well, so the arc of things is, you know, 1.0 sort of was in line with 11, how Rogadin were male only and Makote were female only."
Right.
And people were kind of tired of that. And kudos to Yoshi P's team for adding the other genders into A Realm Reborn. And people were really stoked about that. And then we saw some like concept art of what the Aura could be like. And the ladies were like feral dragon people. Then we got this race that has extreme sexual dimorphism and is like totally like big, tall, manly men and tiny little demure ladies. There was a lot of pushback to that. And we're like, we've been over this. This is why we wanted male Makote and female Rogadin in the first place. And then they just kind of doubled down on it and gave us Viera and Hrothgar, who are like ultra feminine and ultra masculine. And again, there was pushback to that, being like, what? Like, you got this the first time around.
Yeah.
Why are we still having this conversation? We want more interesting gender options.
And it's interesting because Final Fantasy XIV, for all intents and purposes, I do think it's quite a progressive game in many regards.
Absolutely. No, 100%. That's worthy of an episode in and of itself.
Absolutely, yeah. I do want to get into that because, I mean, you have like gay couples and stuff like that. I don't mean like, oh, they're, you know, they're hinted at. They are outwardly gay, like that
totally.
Ro and Lalafell couple in Idyllshire.
Yeah,
they're adorable.
Yeah,
but yeah, I wasn't impressed by the differences between the male and the female. Aura.
Yeah. So when there was that pushback during the Viera and Hrothgar announcement, he released a statement and said, totally, I hear ya. Gotcha.
Right.
Noted. So I had a feeling that I think most people are totally okay if we don't ever get another race. I think we're mostly fine with that. But having the male Vieira and eventually female Hrothgar and possibly the third clan for all of the races is going to give people so many options and would be really lovely. So
I agree. I think also our peers will be very happy because there's a lot to choose from.
Yeah.
Just before we wrap up, though, I was actually kind of curious if Victor, you're the lore master, and Mike, you're no slouch yourself. Is there any hint, any clue on what female Hrothgar are going to look like?
No.
Because aren't they, like, I don't really play a Hrothgar, I don't know a whole lot about them, but aren't they very, like, clan-based thing where there's one female and, like, 50 billion males or something like that?
Not a ton. My understanding is that even when you go to Boja, which is a predominantly Hrothgar society,
right.
They kind of just say the women are somewhere.
Yeah,
it's kind of just like, yeah, you're right. I don't see any women around. Well, I'm sure they're up to something interesting. Like, they don't really have an explanation for it. Like, we know this is a culture, and it has a large female contingency. But we just don't know where they are. They lost them. I don't know.
they're around here somewhere.
Yeah.
Someone check under the table.
Yeah, it's like the male Vieira when you go to their little town. In there, you know, in the trees and stuff, and it's like, oh, there's no dudes around here. So, like, I never thought, like, I understand, like, for lore people, like, but for me, I was just like, oh, there's only females, whatever, let's go.
Like, at least that is a carryover from FF12. And like, it has precedent in Matsuno's Ivalice games.
I think it's actually addressed in the Ivalice raid too. There's a bard who talks a little about how he asked Vieira, isn't it kind of weird to be separated from your males all the time? And she said, literally, it doesn't matter what's on your under the loincloth. It's just
totally. Yeah.
Okay.
All right.
Get it on. But yeah, it's like, I always figured, okay, well, Vieira, they say over and over again, up in the trees somewhere doing dude stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. But there's really not much of an explanation, and I assume that if we do get female Hrothgar, it's going to be a similar difference between the Rogadin males and females. I'm sure we'll get, you know, they'll be slightly more feminine, but still big, you know?
Yeah, like Nala on two legs or something like that.
Yeah.
So I think this has been a great success for our first episode, our first little breakout episode of Charlene Dropouts. I think we sound very smart, not necessarily like dropouts at all, but I still like the name, so I'm going to keep it. Guys, thank you so very, very much for joining me. I hope you join me for future episodes. We're looking at once a month, so hopefully you will be around because I like your company and
absolutely.
I like talking Final Fantasy XIV. Victor, why don't you go ahead and tell us where you can find us?
Sure. Boy, what am I? Oh, at Victor E. Hunter on Twitter is where you can find me. Very relevant to this and will probably come up every once in a while. I'm currently doing a audiobook version of the Encyclopedia Eorzea volume one. So look that up. I've got about like 3.5-4 hours worth of material out there already. So if you're interested in lore or if you're interested in the game but haven't started playing yet or anything, especially for people who never played 1.0 and would like a primer on that, I just released an episode that spans a lot of like what led to the Calamity and started A Realm Reborn.
Oh, sweet.
So yeah, you can just search Encyclopedia Eorzea audiobook. It's under my My diegetic character name, Nongman Sigurdsson, who is a Hrothgar Eorzean scholar.
And for some people, this will be the only way that they can get the encyclopedia. Well, exactly. It was
an accessibility thing too, where it's always sold out, and you know, if you're visually impaired or anything, and need that access to it, I wanted it to be available to people. So yeah, check that
that's
out.
That's a really great cause, and I encourage everyone to go ahead and check it out.
Thank you,
Mike. You.
You can find me every day on Twitter at AutomaticZen, Z-E-N. And you can find me doing stuff at PCMag.com.
That is awesome. And I am, as always, at Nadia Oxford. And the Blood God Pod is at Blood God Pod. And if you enjoyed listening to this podcast, you can get more at patreon.com/bloodgodpod. I mentioned already the recording for Pantheon the Blood God at the $10 tier. Please listen to it. It's all about Shin Megami Tensei 3, and you can find out whether or not it is invited to join the others in the Pantheon, or whether it got cast down into the pits of hell with the menorah of power. God, I love that term. So, from Victor, Mike, and myself, thank you so much for listening. If you have any feedback at all, please, please give it to us or to me even. Don't hurt my boys. They're good boys. But I can take all the slings and arrows. I really want to improve the podcast. This is my first time really hosting a podcast. So hooray. I want to make sure I do it right. And I want to make sure I entertain everybody. So until next time, thank you so much for listening. And may your duty finder wait times be short.
If I were to tell you that this isn't the end, that we will meet again, would you believe me?